Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. 12 minutes after 9 o'clock, it is a Thursday morning. It's the Roundtable panel. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue, and I'm joined. We'll have the whole panel here in a moment, but I'm joined by, well, you know, I read the scripts in the morning for the opening billboard, and it's much like Ron Burgundy. You know, Sarah can write whatever she wants, and I'll read it. So I call you an investigative professor today.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. That kind of works.
That's a great
title.
Two
jobs, yeah. Investigative professor. Okay.
Rosemary Armeo, investigative professor. You have a new title, though.
Director of the journalism program at UAlbany, yes.
Well,
yes, I know.
Well, when the other guys come in, we'll have them bow deferentially.
Oh, I would like that. Yeah, Alan, especially.
Now, you think that'll happen? Nah, I'm not so sure. So before Stu and Alan get here, you had some letters. I mean, yesterday...
We had a tangent yesterday. I can't remember trying to reconstruct it how we got onto it, but there was a discussion about the comparative value and worth of first ladies.
Yeah.
And I expressed some negative opinions about Michelle Obama and Jackie Onassis. And I got two amazing letters, had exchanges with two women, Rose and Elizabeth,
yeah,
who defended both of those first ladies. So we disagreed, but their letters were amazing. And I wanted to say thank you to them. They wrote long, took the time to explain why they had a different point of view than me and what they thought instead. And it was, wow, that's what discourse is really
that's
like.
That's nice.
It was great.
And really, the email address here is roundtable@wamc.org. If Rosemary says something that offends you, roundtable@wamc.org. We have the full panel here now. We have, by the way, please deferentially bow to the chair of the...
Director of the journalism program.
At SUNY.
Yes.
Albany. Isn't that nice?
Wow, those very kids nice. Are really lucky.
Would you autograph my newspaper?
Oh, perhaps.
And that's Stu Shinsky, by the way, who is executive editor of the Poughkeepsie Journal.
Always great to be here, folks.
And, you know, a Mets fan.
I'm just honored to sit next to Rosemary.
Oh.
After listening to yesterday's show, be in the aura.
Yes. Maybe one of the last times you have that chance.
And let's go Mets, by the way.
And Alan Shartok is here. How was the media project, gentlemen?
Well, it was good. It's good. Very good. It's very good.
So on Thursdays, usually the
we
panel...
We covered everything from urination to Donald Trump.
Oh,
well, we didn't talk.
So
did we talk Trump at all?
We had two quick mentions.
Oh. Okay, so the media project will air tomorrow, right?
Sunday at 3. Sunday at 6, Monday at 3.
That's right.
Nice. At least somebody. Somebody who doesn't work here knows it. So,
somebody who isn't the president of the company.
Roundtable@wamc.org is the email address. And we start out with, a political victory for President Obama. The Iran nuclear deal, strongly backed by the president and just as ardently opposed by the GOP, is now on track to get through Congress. In the Senate, Democratic supporters can claim a decisive 34 votes in favor after the senator from Maryland, Barbara Mikulski, right, said she will vote for the pact. That will allow backers to uphold the president's veto, if necessary, of a resolution of disapproval. Republicans are trying to pass this month. Mitch McConnell grudgingly acknowledges that his side will not be able to block the deal, which he says leaves Iran with a threshold nuclear capability. And the political wrangling now apparently is done, although the GOP, perhaps not done. They
admit that the only way they can do anything about it now is to elect a Republican president who would undo, dismantle the deal.
Yeah.
So that sounds done.
You know,
they say day one.
Yeah.
These guys are saying day one.
Rubio said that, yeah. I'm elected president day one.
You heard that about Obamacare, if I remember right.
Yes, that's exactly right. This is not a big victory, a political victory. It was never really conceived as that. And the vote is not really in favor of the measure so much as in favor of a veto to allow the president to do it. There's still a majority vote against the deal. The thing is that the president engineered it this way. He didn't want Congress to have any say in it. And they said, no, we must have a voice on this measure. Mm-hmm. So this allows him a voice, but also allows him the upper hand.
Yeah.
So it worked out the way he wanted it to.
But of course, if you were the president, you would paint this as a great victory.
Of course.
Which is exactly what he's doing. And considering the odds against him, I think it is, I guess I would differ with you a little bit, Rosemary. I think it is a victory. And I'm just trying to provoke you here.
No, it doesn't. I think he was really clever, and it goes along with taking executive actions and doing things on his own. He has set out on a course on this second term, which I really like, to say okay, you guys aren't going to work with me. I don't need you. Here's what I'm going to do without you. And this vote was engineered that way. Good for him.
And it was also apparently that some other countries basically said, look, boys, this is all you're going to get. Right. England, China, France, yep. Germany, and Russia basically said, "This we're not going to go back and renegotiate. This is the deal. If we're not going to make this move forward, we're out, and it's up to you." And that did not happen. They just kept going and stayed with the deal everyone agreed to.
Chris Christie was on CNN this morning, and he made an interesting point. And the point is this, that from now on, the president is inextricably tied to this deal. If it's a bad deal, it's on him.
Okay.
That's how it works.
That's how it works.
That's
same with Obamacare.
Real, that's right. Not real newsworthy from Governor Christie, who also said something like, well, didn't the president maybe make some deals to get support for this? I mean, has Chris Christie ever been to New Jersey?
Very good. Well played. Stu Shinsky.
It happens all the time in every state capital. Deals get done.
Now, this deal may not get done. From the AP today, Iran's supreme leader says world powers must lift international sanctions and not merely suspend them as part of this deal. So there is hardline opposition still to this deal in Iran. Wouldn't it be somewhat ironic if this deal falls through,
Won't happen.
Lack of political support here.
It won't happen. The same thing's going on there that's happened here. That's just political talk.
Yeah, you know, there are these two major groups. There's the clergy and the right wing. And, of course, like China, the army, the Revolutionary Guard, are economically involved in that country. So, in other words, they own the businesses as well as a lot of the businesses. And they can find themselves, I think, in a situation where they're going to be eschewing the money that will be coming in as a result of the deal and the sanctions. But, of course, the Ayatollah wants to reestablish his creds by saying something like this. And by the way, we got a very important letter, if I may, Raymond.
Oh, please.
From Tom, who has now wasted his one on this one.
Okay.
Okay, here's one thing. He says, pan left.
Pan
so
left.
So I can see Alan.
Yeah.
Well, in other words, if you're screaming. But now he's written a second one saying, thank you.
It's always nice to have an Otto Preminger listening in on the program every day. Thank you very much. We're panned left. We'll truck right in a moment.
How's the music?
You know, I don't know. I didn't really hear it this morning. The panel was late. I was talking to you, so I didn't notice. But I'll let you know.
Okay.
You don't have headphones on, so you'll have to take it from me.
There were people this morning, yesterday, who called in and said, we just want Rosemary, nobody else.
On the panel?
For an hour, yeah. Jeez. Just Rosemary doing a rant.
I think that's great.
Yeah, well,
with break for underwriting, of course. Yeah. Speaking of that, it's roundtable at WAMC.org. 20 minutes after 9, we'll take a break. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Beacon Fine Art Printing, Beacon, offering museum-quality G-Clay printing, scanning, retouching, mounting, and fine art reproduction. New studio now open at 71 Maple Street. BeaconFineArtPrinting.com. Turning Stone Resort and Casino, offering racquetball, tennis, and 5 golf courses, including a golf dome. Lessons available. TurningStone.com for details. Mount Gulian Historic Site Beacon, presenting James F. Brown Day, From Slave to Mr. Brown, honoring the life of a fugitive slave who found freedom in Beacon. Saturday, noon to 5, MountGulian.org. And Hubbard Hall Center for the Arts and Education in Cambridge, New York, new classes in dance, yoga, music, stage combat, puppetry, and more, beginning September 9th. HubbardHall.org for registration.
It's the Roundtable on WAMC, 21 minutes after 9 o'clock, Thursday morning. Ray in for Joe, and it's the Roundtable panel, Alan, Rosemary, and Stu Shinsky today. The Clinton email thing won't go away. I know Rosemary's sick of it, and she'll probably be on a rant in about a moment, but this from the AP. A former State Department employee who helped Hillary Rodham Clinton set up her private email server says he will assert his Fifth Amendment right not to testify before the House Committee on Benghazi. Attorneys for Brian Pagliano sent the committee a letter Monday saying their client would not testify at a hearing planned for next week. The panel had subpoenaed Pagliano last month. The letter was first reported Wednesday by the Washington Post. the top Democrat on the Benghazi committee, Maryland Congressman Elijah Cummings, confirmed the letter in a memo to fellow Democrats. Cummings says he's not surprised that Pagliano would wish to take the fifth, given what Cummings called the wild and unsubstantiated accusations against Clinton, the former Secretary of State and current Democratic presidential candidate. This while the FBI scours the Clinton server for evidence of espionage from foreign lands. Rosemary, you're scowling, predictably. Go.
Well, it's drip, drip, drip. It's more of the torturous, torturous campaign against Hillary Clinton. It's like white water all over again. The goods are not there. I mean, this whole Fifth Amendment stuff, this is not a criminal investigation, despite what you've read in the New York Times. The managing editor goes, oh, it was just a mistake. Sorry. It's not a criminal investigation. It's a security investigation. And he is right. I think if I were being called in by the way, one, the Republican chairman of the Benghazi committee to testify, I would be taking these precautions too of the Fifth Amendment. So I think it's more tempest in a teacup, and it's all aimed at getting at Hillary.
I don't know, Rosemary. You may be right from a moral, ethical position.
Factual position.
Yeah, but right. But I do think that in this country, when people take the Fifth Amendment, there is an unfair prejudice that they are avoiding testimony to that will clarify, you know, what really went on, and that they're doing it because they are reflecting on their own potential for criminality. I mean, that's what the Fifth Amendment says. That's the problem.
Okay, so what? That it's in the Fifth Amendment. He should not take it because people will think ill of him, and
or ill of her.
And think
that's
about
the
it.
Biggie.
Or ill of her. Think mm-hmm. think of it. Think of it this way. What is the worst thing he could say? What if he testified? He would say Hillary Clinton called me into her office and said we're going to set up a whole secret system to subvert the information gathering process of the U.S. government. I want you to be in charge. Do you really think that's what's going on? There's no evidence.
Unless he says, well, maybe she asked me to get rid of 200,000 emails or something like that, some action about the email security or duration. I mean, we don't know what this guy is going to say. I mean, are they pulling him in there in a political show of, hey, we can pull this guy in there, and then they're not going to get much out of him? Well
that has been the whole record of this committee. Have
exactly.
they gotten anything until this time?
Whoa. Let's remember that this investigation is not coming from the Republicans. This
is.
No, this investigation is coming from the Justice Department.
Alan, this,
two separate.
This.
Yeah, they're two separate things, but there is an ongoing Justice Department investigation, and if that Democratic president and his Democratic attorney general find that there's a problem here, Hillary could be in a lot of trouble.
Well, correct me, but as I read the story, this subpoena comes specifically from Trent Gowdy, if I'm saying his name correctly, the Republican former prosecutor who's in charge of the Benghazi committee, and he's the one who wants to hear
the
testimony.
No, I agree with you. That is going on, but it isn't as if that's the only... This is a three-dimensional chess game. There's a lot going on that is not Republican, the usual Republican stuff. I agree with you about that, Rosemary.
So the defense, as we hear it from Hillary, is that none of these things were classified prior
Correct.
To her sending it. So let's pose a hypothetical to Rosemary, who is now Secretary of State. If in the course of doing your business as Secretary of State, would you not suspect that some of the items that you do in official business will be classified?
It's not fair because I would never be in that position. I think Hillary is wrong to have done anything other than open every single piece of mail she sent. I am a total advocate of transparency, okay? That said, our U.S. government doesn't require that. The public has never demanded that. So she has gotten into trouble from not being completely transparent. I'm sorry about that. But I also don't think it knocks her out of the race to be president of the United States.
And that's not for you or me to say. That's for the Democratic National Committee. And that brings us to the next point. At what point does this drip, drip, drip that you mention become a volume where Hillary is no longer electable on the national level? We have Biden, who was in Florida yesterday, allegedly testing the waters. He was speaking at an education event, and it has all the appearances of somebody who is certainly not on the campaign trail, but
in the on-deck circle,
yeah.
seemingly.
So doesn't that tell you that the hierarchy is more than a little concerned about this?
Well, I'm sure that they are, and the media and the Republicans have played this in a way that has assured that. Alan is right. There's a bunch of investigations going on. The Republicans have encircled her. They are effectively making it look like much more than it really is. And I really do not believe anything will come out of that. And as for Biden, he was in Florida talking about the Iran treaty. How is that like, oh, it's imminent. He's going to run because he's in a state with a lot of electoral votes?
Oh, it's not imminent, but will suddenly he's getting in the race. And
he's not saying no.
Well, he's not definitively saying he's getting in, but he's exploring, seemingly testing the waters, as you said, right?
Exactly. So. Methinks the lady does protest too much.
Even if he does, is that going to, that's a game changer? Hillary can't beat him?
Look, if a very much establishment candidate joins another very much establishment candidate, somebody in the establishment says, we better have another establishment candidate in there.
I'm not sure what that means.
Well, in other words, Bernie Sanders
today, our governor, who is a big Clinton supporter, has said, oh, I think it would be great if Biden came in. You know, it gives a great choice to Democrats.
Might be covering his behind
bases, yeah.
Because Biden was here, put his frame next to the governor's and said he's the best governor in the United States. So, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, depending on who gets nominated, you wouldn't want to be out in the cold.
Yes, exactly right.
The email address here is roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Not sure if we have any yet.
We do.
All right. Well, we have about a minute before the break.
Okay. No question. All right. This is really bad.
Why?
Well, no. I mean, if I could make this thing work.
Device. You're a slave to technology.
Which I can't. I'm a slave to technology, and I did something this morning that I haven't done for a long time.
The VCR. The Betamax. There you go.
Okay. Well, what happened? Deborah says, have we forgotten Obama's Kenyan birth certificate? Republicans will continue to throw anything to see if it sticks. And that's a sort of rosemary.
You know, Hillary has tried this whole vast right-wing conspiracy motif before.
Well, she was right.
Yeah.
When she said it the last time and they were after Bill and Monica, she was certainly right. It wasn't having to do with their personal morality. God knows we've seen enough of them who have done the dirty themselves.
Every side of politics has a conspiracy.
Yeah.
Every element, every plane, every direction, every plateau has its own conspiracy.
Stu, you speak with wisdom. All right, we'll take a break here. Roundtable@wamc.org is the email address. More entertainment and fun ahead. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC, Thursday morning, 9:33. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue on this, the Roundtable panel. The panel consisting of Alan Chartok and Rosemary Armeo, investigative professor, and Stu Shinsky, who is the executive editor of the Poughkeepsie Journal. Nice to have you all here. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org. And before we get to letters, a technical note. I guess there are issues this morning with one of our transmitters down in Middletown, 91.7.
Yep.
And our engineers are working on that.
The engineers are on the way down there to take care of the whole thing. It's really too bad because it comes first. You know, if people can't hear the station, then it's not good. And we have 28 of these transmitters, and there isn't a day that my hair doesn't get just a bit whiter.
You know, Pat Cooney, by my account, a genius and one of the hardest workers in the world.
He is.
I could tell I didn't know there was a transmitter off, but I could see the vein on the side of his head popping out. I knew there was trouble this morning. I knew to stay clear of Pat.
Yeah.
But Pat's on the case, people, so it'll be fixed sooner than later.
Yeah.
And then the other bit of business before we get to letters is this very exciting Berkshire Ramblers show.
Oh, my goodness.
Coming up at the Guthrie
You're
Center.
You're too kind.
It's Saturday night, is it?
No, it's Saturday night at 8 o'clock, 528-1955, 413-528-1955. Yeah. They told me that they were selling, the tickets were going, there are only about 100 tickets to the whole thing.
That's exciting.
And they're selling like hotcakes yesterday. I just want to tell all my friends that I'd love it, and all our friends, that if you can be there, it would be great. It's going to be great singing, great fun. It's a benefit, by the way, for the Guthrie Center. We never take money, but it'll be...
Would anyone even offer you money is the question.
Yeah, they have.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Now, so they put sawdust on the floor? It's a hootenanny kind of thing?
What do you think? This is McSorley's?
I don't know.
No.
Hay bales and such? I don't know. I've never really been to one of these things.
Yeah. Did anybody ever tell you you look an awful lot like Kosygin?
Well, at times it's been said. So you guys do not use electric instruments in the Berkshire Ramblers, right?
No.
No?
No.
Strictly purist in the Pete Seeger sense? You know, he got mad at Bob Dylan.
Unclear.
What do you mean unclear?
I'm telling you that's unclear. There's a lot of controversy about it. He said he didn't do it.
Isn't it on tape?
No.
Presumably they allowed tape.
No.
No?
No, there's no tape of it. Only in A Mighty Wind did they take off on him and sort of show that.
Did you actually see that? That's one of my favorites.
I hated it.
Well,
I hated it because it made fun of my people.
But, I mean, it was loving fun, right?
No, it wasn't.
Yeah, you're right. All right, let's get to the email, roundtable@wamc.org. Alan, why don't you take a few bars and read some for us?
Okay, Robert. All the Republican candidates are referred to by their past or current honorifics. He said something earlier, and now he's saying something else, so I don't get that one.
All right.
Okay.
I'm with you there.
Okay. I appreciate that. Bonnie says, panel, where is Ken Starr when you need him? Transparency delayed is transparency denied. I'm of the opinion that Hillary's advisors may be stealth Republicans. How else to explain her interface so far with the public and the press? And that's from our regular correspondent, Bonnie, at 1-800-348.
No, that's the fund drive. Wait for it. That's next month. It's about a month from now.
Well, what is it? It's 1-800, right?
But it's the 348. Email. We're doing the email.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
I'm
yeah.
I'm not taking
Oh,
it.
Yeah, you're so right.
Oh, my gosh.
You're so right.
But I tell you what,
just had a lapse here.
If you want to call a pledge in, feel free. There's somebody who will take your pledge.
You're so right.
The lockbox is always open, folks.
Yeah, you are. Thanks, Stu.
Yes, thanks, Stu. Okay, so JB says, it looks like the Iran deal is safe thanks to most Senate Democrats. So far, the only two who don't support it are Senator Menendez, who is under investigation for corruption, and Senator Schumer, who said God put him in the Senate to protect Israel. He never said any such thing, and I don't like it when you do
that. But you, Alan, said that he, back when he first said, I'm not going to support this, you said, he's probably pretty sure this deal is a done deal anyway, and he's doing the politically correct thing.
When I saw, and somebody's going to criticize me for this mighty wind, but when I saw Senator Gillibrand coming out forcefully for the deal, I said, she's not doing that without talking to Chuck first.
Exactly,
you know, yeah. So, but maybe I'm wrong. Who
okay.
knows? You
know, it could be. Would be a first.
Yeah. David says, there's more nuanced discussion than the politically and religiously fueled discussion. Israelis remember the Holocaust, and also Jews in New York and Los Angeles from Iran and Iraq know how deadly Iran is. Iran is a huge part of the terrible refugee crisis, but Israelis have a heart, too. Look into Israeli author Etgar Keret, very popular in Israel and critical. Okay. And Christie remark from W. Bill, has Governor Christie forgotten the president who created the disaster that exists in the Middle East today? Obama inherited this mess, he says. Joel reminds us about Middletown being off the air.
Thank you, Joel. We're working on that.
Yeah. And let's see. Did I ever tell you that the Berkshire Ramblers were playing Saturday night at Saturday night at 8 o'clock?
Rosemary's covering her head.
It's just what?
It's like at that movie, The Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
So
the Berkshire Ramblers are playing?
I think that was one of the Hillary emails they found.
413.
Yes.
413. Classified. 528-1955.
All right. Sir.
Okay.
All
there
right,
we go.
Fine.
And I want to see everybody there.
Okay.
Okay. So then. I got all this mail from David Gustina about the media project. No, I think that's it.
Moving on here, speaking of politics, as we often do, the Republican National Committee has challenged every GOP presidential candidate to sign a pledge not to undertake a third-party bid in 2016 under any circumstances. The challenge, confirmed by multiple campaigns yesterday, aimed squarely at Donald Trump. The billionaire businessman last month repeatedly threatened to launch a third-party bid should he fail to claim the Republican nomination. Such a bid would make it all but impossible for the Republican Party to win the White House in 2016. Republican National Committee chairman is set to meet privately with Trump in New York today, and then Trump is scheduled to speak to reporters The private meeting is confirmed by an RNC official who has not been authorized to discuss the plan, but...
Not authorized, but it's doing it anyway. And if you believe that he wasn't authorized to do it, but we're saying he's unauthorized, that kills me, slays me.
This is a pretty farcical little pledge, though, right? It's not
it's
set...
It's garbage.
I'm going to go in today and have my students sign a pledge that they'll do all the readings, and I bet it'll have about as much emphasis and force.
So you sign the pledge.
Right.
And then... You break the pledge. What are they going to do? Throw you to Siberia?
Yeah.
What are they going to do?
You're right, Stu. what you say is, yes, I signed the pledge, but a cockroach came across the wall, and that negates my pledge.
I don't have to do it now. The wind changed. Things are different now.
Yeah. Right.
It's a waste of time.
So. Well, I love it. I love the fact that they say they're asking everyone to sign the pledge.
Well, Kasich said he would.
That's great. I love it. And everybody should sign the pledge. But we know it's not an everybody issue. It's a Trump issue.
It's definitely Trump.
Republicans love pledges, though. Aren't they the ones who signed the I won't raise taxes?
Read my lips.
Yeah.
That's working out pretty well for all of us.
Yeah, that's been really great for the country.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Stu Shinsky, you are the executive editor for the time being at the Poughkeepsie Journal.
Also the acting publisher.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so you're the executive editor, but you're acting publisher. So you're always the executive editor.
It's all an act, actually.
Okay, so the publishing things, how's that working out for you?
It's fun.
Yeah?
Very invigorating, a lot of new things to learn and tackle, and a lot of new challenges, but we do what we can do.
So those of us who are not in the newspaper biz, what does a publisher do? You come in, you light a cigar, you put your feet up. Say, all right, boys, I want this thing out here by 3 p.m.
No, you say Lois and Clark. You do this.
What do you do?
It is a role that is primarily business-driven. Financial records, trending, legal issues. Yes. And anything and everything stops at that desk, which I'm honored to help out in an interim basis. And,
but you're a newsman at heart, right?
I'm a news guy. That's,
so this is a little alien to you?
These publisher types use a lot of numbers. I'm famous with letters. I know letters. Numbers are different.
So do you have you have the time in your day to be the executive editor as well?
You move faster. You delegate more. You try to get to everything you can get to as efficiently as you can.
What's new? You have a big series coming up this weekend, right?
Yes, we're starting a series called MoneyWise. And the reason we're doing this is this wonderful economy that supposedly the recession's over. Well, maybe statistically, but in different houses, there's a lot of difficult choices being made. And what we're doing is we're starting a series to help people identify how they can stretch their money. These are people who are, maybe they lost their job, they're not getting raises, but all their costs have gone up, and they're just trying to get by. So what we're doing is we're going to be starting a series that's going to run through the end of the year. It will be examining techniques that people in the Hudson Valley are using to stretch their money.
So give us an example.
Okay. Well, our story Sunday is about cord cutters. These are people who are just saying no to cable TV. No, I'm not going to pay that $100 a month, $150 bucks a month. And what they're doing, they're going to the new technologies. They're taking advantage of Hulu and Netflix and apps where you can watch HBO and things like that. And they're basically getting entertainment in a different way, saving a lot of money doing it, and redirecting that money where they might really need it.
Well, I know bills keep going up, and cable bills are no different.
Outrageous. They're outrageous. I mean, they are really outrageous. It's Alan Chartok sitting here right now. I'm sorry. Somebody wants to write me. You know, I know these cable execs, and I know all about them. And I'm telling you now, it's a terror.
Well,
it's a terror.
I must say that I'm certainly a dinosaur. But
yes, you are.
A brontosaurus or something. But I got to tell you, I would never want to be without it. I can't wrap my mind around something that is fully a la carte, the Hulus and we have Netflix, but I need to have the schedule. I know 9 o'clock tonight on the Discovery Channel is X.
But you know what? There comes a point at which you really don't get a choice, and I think that's what Stu's series is going to deal with.
Yes.
When you really are living on a fixed budget, and forget about whether you've lost a job, because that's important, but you just don't have it. So now you have to start making choices.
But internet access is not free. and Hulu and Netflix and these other things, not free as well.
So now you have to make a decision whether you...
Exactly right. Yeah, we're going to tell stories of people who are struggling to pay their mortgages, who are going in danger of foreclosure, who literally are living off their credit cards, people who have been looking for jobs for months, people who do not have the ability to pay their bills. And they're basically saying, in this case, it's not as extreme where... You know, if your situation is that bad, you've already cut the cable out. But in the meantime, people saying, you know, I didn't get that raise. I had to take a job where I'm making less than I made last year. I have to find ways to make this money go further.
Yeah. And so this is an ongoing series? This will be an ongoing coming up?
So yes. One is cable. You got another one?
One is cable. We're going to be doing folks who are...
I approve of the cable one.
Another one coming up is people who are working in fast food restaurants and trying to live on that income. And that gets at the whole debate about the $15 an hour for fast food workers. So we're interviewing people who actually live on fast food incomes and how they get by. And it's exactly what you would think. Some of these are just absolute horror stories.
Yeah. I still don't understand how you can... single out one segment of the job market say this minimum wage could be higher, but somebody else who does something else will still be at 12.
Well, no, I agree with you. I couldn't agree with you more. On the other hand, I think that where they're going with this very good series is when you don't have choices.
Right.
And that you just have to make intelligent decisions. And there's no two ways about it. You might have to mow your own lawn if you're hiring somebody to do it. You might have to, there's a long list of things that you can do.
Yeah, not all of them are draconian decisions where do I keep the lights on or put gas in my car? Some of them are, you know, I just can't spend what I used to spend. And, you know, we're not talking about go out to restaurants less. We're talking about real crisis level decisions in some cases where I can't feed my kids. What do I do?
Sure. And what do you feed your kids?
Yeah.
The Poughkeepsie Journal is online. The website?
PoughkeepsieJournal.com.
Is that behind a paywall?
It is to a degree. Okay. Subscribers get access to all content, but you can visit that website and get selected content without charge.
Okay, so if you're really on a shoestring...
You can visit our website, yes.
Okay, fair enough.
We heard from Ken, guys, who said, I love the checks in the mail. We need RNC, Republican National Committee, should take little comfort in a pledge from a guy that is on his third wife and bankrupted creditors four times, just saying.
Good point.
Okay.
So much for pledges and
Donald
vows.
Trump, I believe?
Yes. Could be.
Could be him. And all like that. You want another one?
Well, we want to take a break and then get back to some
sure.
more letters. The email address here is roundtable@wamc.org. It's the roundtable panel. Mr. Chacon, let's take a break.
Support comes from CSEA, New York's leading union for more than a century. Hanford Mills Museum, East Meredith, New York, hosting the Antique Engine Jamboree on Saturday, September 12th. Steam and gas-powered engines and antique tractors, doodlebugs, autos, fire trucks, and more. HanfordMills.org. And Foresight Land Services, for over 45 years offering civil engineering, land surveying, planning, and environmental permitting to private and municipal clients in the Berkshires and Eastern New York. ForesightLand.com.
Times. It's the roundtable panel on WAMC, and boy, we're glad the mic was off. Stu Shinsky, he would have been in trouble.
I know. Publishers talk like that.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't.
You've been in journalism a long time.
I know a lot of
them. Yeah, but I never talked to publishers.
As Pete's saying, publishers are guilty of prostitution.
Yeah, right you are. The email address here is roundtable@wamc.org. Alan, you any more email in the mythical mailbag?
We did hear from Kathy, who said, "Dear Roundtable, our flood-prone town of Sydney, New York, recently held a well-attended emergency preparedness workshop promoted by Governor Cuomo. Children were introduced to a program called the Pillowcase Project. Because so many kids showed up at relief centers after the floods with their pillowcases full of hastily gathered personal items. I only hope Governor Cuomo and the New York DEC will help protect us further by denying the 401 quality permit for the ill-named Constitution Pipeline that would clear-cut 700,000 trees that protect us from flooding and protect our water quality." And that's from Kathy.
Okay, that's really nothing to do with what we talked about today.
Well, does it have to?
Well, yeah,
no,
I think it should.
That's interesting.
I think that the letter should be about what we talk about, and you join in the
conversation. Well, for the most part. But if something important comes up...
this is a letter pointing to something perhaps we should talk about soon.
Okay.
And she's talked about it. That's what I like about it. She's talked about it. And here at WAMC, we like people to introduce...
As a matter of protocol, I'm against that sort of thing.
I know.
Two to one against them.
Well, you know,
one of the reasons they call you Uncle Grumpy is that, you know, you are Uncle Grumpy.
They call him Uncle Grumpy?
Yeah, they
that's
do.
That's cute.
Oh, they have been for
they
a long time.
Yeah, they do. They call
since
him Uncle Grumpy.
Since the days down in Mount Kisco, they've called me that. I don't know why.
No, we don't know why either. We think it's a bad rap.
He's so sunny.
You know, that's it. That's it. All right. Anything else?
No.
Okay. SAT scores at lowest level in 10 years, fueling worries about high schools. This is from the Washington Post. I don't know if you guys had a chance to look at this one. Mm-hmm. It was a late edition. Quoting here from a piece by Nick Anderson in today's Washington Post, scores on the SAT have sunk to the lowest level since the college admission test was overhauled in 2005, adding to worries about student performance in the nation's high schools. The average score for the class of 2015 was 1490. Out of a maximum of 2,400, the College Board reported Thursday. That's down 7 points from the previous class's mark and was the lowest composite score of the past decade. There were declines of at least 2 points on all three sections of the test, critical reading, math, and writing. In my day, there were only two sections.
That's right.
There was
math and verbal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so the reading and the writing was together.
Right.
But now it's three.
So here's my point.
Okay.
Do we really think that college boards are predictors of success in life? And I would argue that they are not.
But are they predictors of success in college?
Well, yes, and that tells us something about what's wrong with college. in other words, I can't tell you the number of people that I know who have graduated at the top of their classes. But they are not, and they had college boards to prove it, but they are not what we would call the great successes in life, like, for example, Donald Trump in the American, that was a joke. Don't write me. That was a joke. In the
Alan at WAMC.org, in
the American society, I think that colleges are rarefied places where people test on the basis of stuff that may not be relevant to success in life.
But reading and math skills clearly would be relevant to something resembling success, yes?
Well, yes. I mean, I think yes, but I don't know about... I mean, I can only sort of judge from some of the close personal cases I know about.
I think focus is wholly wrong on this. We should be looking not at colleges. And yes, SATs are used incorrectly to judge who will succeed. But let's look back at the high schools. These tests do measure what you learned in high school. And the results are not good. Those tests have been revised multiple times, trying to make them more effective. And kids never do well. They have consistently gone down, which means our high schools are not performing.
Well. Or maybe the tests
kids
are bad.
The scores have not gone up at any time.
The family dynamic is so different now. There's more single-parent families. There's more economic issues. I mean, yeah, you go to school, you take a test. It's not just the questions on that piece of paper that you're answering. It's your life experience. It's your context. And sometimes, yeah, I mean, there's personal situations where it just affects, can I concentrate? So
well,
it's a big issue.
Read it any way you want. What we end up looking at, I think, when you see these numbers, are high schools that do not take into account family situations and are not responding. The scores keep going down. They have not gone up in many years. Why is that?
Well, I'm sorry, Rosemary. How does a teacher with 30 students in a classroom start to take you know, cognizance of what's going on in a family situation.
I am not blaming the teachers. I am blaming school systems that give that teacher 30 students. We don't put enough money into our schools, and we have not looked at the structure of schools to figure out how we should be teaching. And our schools really have never taught immigrant children well. Around the turn of the century, 50% of kids dropped out. It was okay because there were factory jobs. Now we have to make sure all our kids are educated, and they are not.
Well, bravo. You're right about everything you've just said. Nevertheless, I would take some precautionary thing about immigrant kids. There were a lot of immigrant kids living on the Lower East Side, the point at which my mother and father were coming up, and they did rather well. So it's not that all immigrant kids are
50% was a dropout rate that was typical in New York City schools at the turn of the century, mm-hmm. from what I've read. Well, so that is not a responsive school system, even though you can point to many individuals who succeeded in it. We've never revised. High schools, wow.
Something's going on. Something's going on. Like, my father did not graduate from high school, and he could read 5 newspapers a day, which he did. He could do any math problem in his head. This is totally unknown. I mean, we're not finding that in colleges, let alone from people who didn't graduate from high school. So the standards were very different.
And colleges are not just looking at only these achievement tests as entry factors. They're looking at extracurriculars. And some colleges, this is just one factor of 10. So this used to be the be-all, end-all, do I get into college or not? And it's just not anymore the sole proprietor of that decision.
But how do you fix the system? When I took this, maybe 81 or 82, we jokingly even then called it the suburban aptitude test. And clearly there are some cultural issues with this test. When you have, Hispanics and African Americans failing, not failing the test, but having much lower grades at a much higher percentage, there's a problem with the test in some way. And I don't know what way that is, but that would have to be accounted for, right?
Yeah,
and they've worked on this for decades now, trying to make them more culturally attuned. And I really do begin to wonder whether it's the schools that have the problem, the schools
anyway,
that should be teaching these kids.
Anyway, we heard from Rick, who said a very important letter. He says, right on, Alan.
Really? About what?
SATs do not determine success in life. Did you ever hear of anyone going into a job interview being asked what their SAT
yes,
scores were?
Yes, I was. When I went to work for the Virginian Pilot, they wanted to know my SAT scores.
How'd you do?
I lied. I mean, it had been decades. it was decades before I figured
nice.
He wanted high grades, so okay. I told him high grades.
Fine. Life experience and work experience mean even more than where you went to college, said Rick, and I agree with that. And then Bob says, no amount of money is going to compensate for parents who did not read to their children and do not take an interest in their children's education. And that's from Bob. Could be.
I think there's a point to be made. There.
Dear Roundtable, yesterday I was listening to NPR. There was an interview with one of the Democratic candidates. I've forgotten his name now, but it hit on the point that there are to be few debates with Democratic candidates, which I think is a terrible idea. This person was only the third person I'd heard running for the Democratic nomination. I'd like to hear about some of the non-Hillary or non-Bernie nominations, as well as your opinion on this whole debate debacle. Thanks. Dylan from Vermont.
We talked about that yesterday.
Ad nauseum.
Well, Carly Fiorina is going to be part of the larger debate.
So,
And we heard from Wesley, who said, it is sad that once noble GOP has descended into loyalty oaths, purity tests, and rhino purges, R-I-N-O.
Republican in name only.
Oh, which would be Donald Trump, right?
Yes.
And from Jorley, as the picture of the boy that drowned off the cursed coast of Turkey has made the news.
Amazing, awful.
I see a lot of Americans pointing fingers at Europe while here they abuse Central American refugees here. Incredible.
True. Okay. Very true. We have to come back to migrants, refugees sometimes.
Indeed. Okay, and then we have from Bob. Do we have any time
now? We have about 12 seconds.
Okay, well then Bob checked in on the cable companies.
And what did Bob say?
He said, if we buy less TV programming from the cable companies and use Netflix and Hulu, the cable companies simply jack up what they charge for an internet connection.
Uh-huh.
And since we also get our internet connection from the cable companies, they have us between a rock and a hard place. It's our government, in other words, us, that lets this happen.
All right. Well, the email address is roundtable@wamc.org. Great letters, everybody. And thanks to our panel today. Investigative Professor Rosemary Armeo.
I love that.
I'm going to be using
that. I love that.
Yeah.
Investigative Professor.
I love it. And
I don't know how accurate it is.
It's a combination of a suit of underwear, wore 9 months without a single tear. Wore 9 months?
Right. Well, Stu Shinsky.
Are you talking about my clothes again?
Stu Shinsky, thanks a lot for being here. I mean, we may never see you again.
But thrilled, I'm sure.
And Alan, well done. Hour number two is on the way.
It's just beginning, folks.